Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here and joined by Jim Packard. This is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. And of course, we count on WPR Ideas Network for talk about issues that matter to you. We count on it. You count on it. And we count on you as well to help keep these discussions on the air. So make a gift, any amount right now. Help us to pay for the program you depend on. Give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Jim, we always have a goal.
That's right. Let's talk about goals to get started today. Last hour, the goal was 50 pledges, and they heard from 35 listeners. But for us yesterday, the goal was 70, and with Michael Perry in hand, why, we got 84 calls. So once again, an excellent showing from the listeners to the Larry Mueller program on Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour and a half, we have another goal of 70 pledges. These goals are extremely important. They help us stay on track financially so that we can keep the discussion going on Wisconsin Public Radio. So take a moment now. We do have an exciting offer for today and today only. Pledge any amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, and you'll be entered into a draw for an iPad. Larry, you know what the iPad is and why people would want something like that.
It's a great I have an iPad. We have a family. We have a family iPad. We all three of us, my 7-year-old uses it, my wife uses it, and I use it. It's a fun and a very utilitarian, very useful thing to have, as a matter of fact. And whatever amount you contribute during the program, your name goes in for a drawing for the iPad. And if you contribute $60 today or more, we're going to send you a couple of copies of some books. Scott Craven, our guest today, UW Extension Wildlife Ecologist, and he and some other folks have put together a couple of publications. One's called Birding in the Badger State and Beyond, and the other is Bird Feeding Tips for Beginners and Veterans. And we'll send those to you with your gift of $60 or more. Go online to WPR.org, make your contribution, or call in 888-202-2552.
Supporting Wisconsin Public Radio is one of the best things that you can do with 3 minutes of your time. Give us your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to pledge, and how you'd like to pay for it. And whether you call or pledge online, we will keep your personal information secure. We will not reveal it to anybody. And your gift right now will turn into the stories and the programs that keep you connected to the world. So give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We get such great guests on WPR like Scott here, Scott Craven, because they know you'll ask great questions. They won't be interrupted by commercials either. Your support makes this possible. You are the most reliable part of our budget. Thanks in advance for making your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And for that pledge of $120 or more, you'll receive the WPR member card, a card that gives you 2-for-1 discounts at over 200 participating restaurants, 50 B&Bs, 55 cultural attractions, and 22 golf courses around Wisconsin. The member card, a year-long reminder of how grateful we are for your support today, because we could not produce great radio without your donation. We're happy to send you the member card as a way of saying thank you. So give now $120 or more. You will receive the member card, pledging at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And for that $120, we'll also send you Birding in the Badger State and Beyond and Bird Feeding Tips for Beginners and Veterans. And one more thing, your name goes in the hat for a drawing for an iPad. That's they're really a lot of fun to use and very utilitarian. Give now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552. And thanks to everyone who has already contributed. And thanks to Scott Craven for coming by. Scott, UW Extension Wildlife Ecologist, Hey, great to see you. You've been out and about a little bit.
Well, it's good to be back. I have to admit, on the first Wednesday of the month, I was in Utah in the mountains at a professional conference fighting for oxygen, as it turned out, at 8,000 feet. But I got up that morning, I started to twitch and shake a little bit. So, well, gee, I'm not going to be on the radio today. It didn't seem
didn't seem right.
But now we just have a short break until the November program, so all will be well again.
All will be well. Well, you know, last time you were on, somebody called in about freshwater jellyfish.
Yes, and we fumbled and stumbled through an answer. I said, yeah, I think I've heard of those. But as it turned out, there were many astute listeners who, after the program, got in touch with me. Got in touch with me for a variety of reasons. Some couple school teachers that actually had jars of these things in the classroom.
Oh, cool.
What the heck are these? And the kids were very interested. And then one person from the Milwaukee Public Museum who sent an article, a scientific article from the Journal of Limnology and Oceanography called Trophic Relationships of the Freshwater Jellyfish, and a very long, complicated scientific name, authored by some folks here at UW. And as it turns out, this particular animal is a hydrozoan. Normally during the year, it has the appearance of a hydra, which is kind of a little stick-like animal waving its tentacles in the in the water. Very tiny little thing. But apparently it has another form, the Medusa form, which looks like a jelly. It is a jellyfish. And these appear in September. That's when we got the calls, in a wide variety of ponds and lakes in the state. And they float around and feed that way and then eventually apparently return to the hydra-like form. So,
pretty cool.
Pretty cool. The short answer is there are freshwater jellyfish. They're about a centimeter in diameter, I guess. And if people want more information, I think if you Google them, you will find out anything you might want to know.
You had a comment from somebody, Scott, as well, if I'm not mistaken, about white squirrels. Were there something come up?
Yes, there are a couple of things. Things come in periodically in the intervening time that I'm on. And in this case, I thought this might be worth kind of an ask the audience kind of thing.
Yeah.
This gentleman, excuse me, emailed me from the Eau Claire area, where he's lived for 60-some years, and reported the occasional black squirrel in northern Wisconsin, which we've talked about before. But apparently, as he penned the email, he was looking at three snow-white squirrels in the yard.
Wow.
And said he now sees them all over town in surrounding villages and throughout the countryside. And we've talked about the different color phases before, but I'm just wondering if other folks are experiencing a burgeoning population of white
squirrels.
So we'll see what the callers have to say.
And speaking of that, if you'd like to join in with a question for Scott or a comment, I hope you will. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@WPR.org. And before we go back to the phones, there was another question or comment I think that came up last time about dragonflies and dragonfly the masses of dragonflies that people were seeing.
Yeah, as I recall, the caller had indicated that they were just seeing huge numbers of these things around the yard, and we speculated on a variety of explanations and possibilities. And I think the one thing that didn't come up is that many of these larger forms, the ones that are, you know, maybe have a wingspan of 4 or 5 inches, are actually migratory.
Mm-hmm.
And that particular time of year, another plausible explanation is that these were aggregations, if they in fact move in aggregations, that were getting ready to head out for the year. I have to admit, I haven't seen any around now for the past few weeks. So they've gone.
They're gone.
Wherever they go.
All right. Well, now let's take some phone calls. Marty in Spring Prairie, let's go to you now. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I've got a question about my woods. I use fire as a way to control for buckthorn, and I want to make sure to time my burning so that I don't impact the tree frog population.
Well, I think that you've got a couple things to think about. I mean, tree frogs are one issue, but there are lots of other potential interactions between fire and wildlife and other vegetation. But I think in your case, since you're using it to control the buckthorn, and you may know this already, I'm sure that there's a time of year when the buckthorn is most vulnerable to fire. And you also, of course, need a time of year when there's enough duff or debris on the forest floor to carry a fire hot enough to kill the buckthorn. That's a question that if you haven't checked into that already, I'd direct to your local DNR forester and just see what the timing recommendation is. As far as the tree frogs are concerned, those little guys are in the upland sites until, in fact, I'm up until last week, I was still seeing some of them on my garage door hunting for insects at night, so they were still out and about. And I would assume that very quickly as it cools off, they're going to be down. They hibernate in upland sites on the forest floor, but should be deep enough in the debris and litter layer that the fire would pass over them without ill effect. Removing that duff on the forest floor may also remove some of the insulation that the frogs were perhaps counting on for a little thermal insulation, but I don't know. I really can't say how much of a problem that is. But you do have a window between them being down in the forest floor for the winter and then their emergence in. Tree frogs usually enter the singing chorus in the ponds, depending on the phenology, you know, mid to late April, somewhere in there.
April. Yeah.
Mid to late April, early May. So
it's usually not a bad time to be burning, too.
Yeah. So I think you probably your best bet is very early spring, when the buckthorn is just beginning to move some nutrients and whatnot up from the roots, and the frogs are still out of harm's way, hopefully.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Jennifer and Madison, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen. I just wanted to share two incidents of white squirrels. One of them was in western Illinois as a child. My grandfather was obsessed with squirrels and would film them and feed them and all sorts of things. And he would have a regular visitor that was a white squirrel who was a true albino. Mm-hmm. And then this was recently, I lived in Brooklyn, New York, and there was a white squirrel, again a true albino, that showed up in Prospect Park.
Cool.
And it was kind of a funny situation because there were people who loved the squirrel. And then there was a hawk that was hunting the squirrel one day, and people drove the hawk off because it was a white squirrel, and there was a huge debate about whether you should leave the hawk alone because it was a protected species or trying to defend the squirrel. So it was like a big thing, and everyone in the community was sort of talking about this white squirrel, but they really are very interesting. But those are the only two incidents that I've ever come across white squirrels, so I'm kind of interested to hear if other people call in and there is this sort of, you know, whether they're true albinos or whether they're just some kind of variation.
Blonde phase or something. There is a kind of a really light blonde phase, isn't
there? There's a really light kind of yellowish blonde phase called a Lady Isabella squirrel, but that's still a gray squirrel.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks for the observations.
And stay listening because Sarah's up next with a comment about white squirrels. So stay listening, Jennifer. Let's go to Sarah in Barron County. Sarah, hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
We've had a white squirrel in our yard for a couple of years now. And this fall we haven't seen him in a while, and I'm wondering if he just reached his age limit. Mm-hmm. We've had him for like 3 years. And his behavior did seem different. He wasn't as flighty as the other squirrels. I mean, we could walk almost right up to him and take pictures of him. Hmm. I'm wondering if it was because he was a true albino, that his eyesight wasn't good as the other.
It's hard to speculate on that, but since he's disappeared, I've got to think that any squirrel that behaves that way, that's not a good survival strategy if you're not as wary as a normal squirrel.
How long does a squirrel typically live, Scott? Four years?
For most small rodents, that's getting out there. 3-4 years is a good long life.
We have kind of a menagerie of white animals, as a matter of fact. I saw a albino pickerel frog this year.
Wow, that would be a good one.
And we also have an albino buck who's nearing 6.5 years old in the neighborhood, and he's appeared on numerous people's trail cam and in a video, and he's a 12-pointer now.
Wow.
And he's quite impressive. He sticks out like a sore thumb, especially in the summer when you see him, and he's quite around the neighborhood. I mean, you see him regularly, at least once a week.
Hopefully he's safe here in Wisconsin by law. We'll hope that holds for him.
Right. Yeah. he's far enough away from highways that he should stay safe.
Okay.
But once it snows, it's I've seen him in the winter too, and it's kind of strange because you can't see anything. All you can see is his horns because they're the normal color.
Or his nose.
Yeah, his nose.
His nose is pink.
Ah.
And I've seen him in velvet this year, and his velvet is pink.
Wow. That's pretty neat.
It's pretty impressive.
Yep.
Thank you. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Scott Craven, UW Extension Wildlife Ecologist, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You can join in with your wildlife questions at 1-800-642-1234. And tell you what, we've got, well, Medicine Man Joe in Hazelhurst says he has had two albino squirrels for a few years now, 2 years, actually. So they're in Hazelhurst. We've got a couple more albino squirrels.
We should have put up a map with pins in it so we could have plotted them. But
there's another one.
Okay.
And speaking of rare occurrences, Scott, it's not often that you're in a lake or a river and come across at least a Wisconsin lake or river and come across an alligator.
No, not very often, but people may be more sensitive to this with that that new show on whichever channel, the Swamp People, that's all about alligator hunting. But apparently back in mid-September, an alligator about 3 feet long was captured and removed from Big Muskego Lake in Waukesha County. And in and of itself, that's an interesting encounter, but what it points up is the continuing and ongoing and sadly widespread release of all manner of exotic pets into the wild when they all of a sudden are either unwanted, too big to take care of, whatever. But this is just no good can come of this, Larry. This all sorts of problems have been or will be created in not only Wisconsin, but virtually everywhere in the world when people are moving animals that are not native to this area around the landscape and then releasing them. For the most part, they won't survive.
No.
So it's not a humane way to treat your pet. And if they do survive, then there's a tremendous risk of them displacing or negatively impacting native species with disease or predation or who knows what. People, please
don't
dump this stuff out in the environment, whether they're fish or reptiles or birds or mammals. Either find a new home for them, have them adopted, take them to a shelter, or if all else fails, have them humanely euthanized. I know that's a difficult thing to do with a former pet, but letting them go is not the thing to do.
Let's turn to Bill in Eagle next. Bill, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have this back room that used to be a garage that's been converted into sort of a living space. It's not heated, but it's got a wood-burning stove in it. And I guess maybe you would call it a cathedral ceiling or roof. Anyway, up near the top of the roof, about 20, 25 feet up, there's a big window. And up near that window is a big hornet's nest or a wasp nest.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't really even see it very well from the ground, but during the day, you know, I've got a whole bunch of wasps that are, like, crawling around that window because of the light trying to get out. And I'm just wondering if they'll die off over the winter when it freezes, or if I'm going to have to somehow find a way to get them out of here.
So they're actually inside?
Yeah, they're inside this, right, inside this.
But it's not heated.
Unheated room, right. So they would freeze over the winter.
Yeah, certainly on a very cold night, even if they're not dead, they'll be dormant in the nest. And at that point, you could go up there with a ladder. And what's normally done is you're going to run a big black plastic bag up around the nest, knock it loose, tie the bag up, and dispose of it. And that's the end of it. But if you don't want to deal with these things
just
buzzing
wait.
Around in this in this warm weather, these wasp and hornet spray cans you can get that will shoot 25 or 30 feet and will instantly knock them down. I mean, you could take them out with a can of that stuff in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And then at that point, once you feel your see no inactive ones, bag the nest or knock it down and be done with it.
Frankly,
or you can wait. It's up to you.
Yeah, they're gonna die, and they're not gonna live through the winter. And you should be. And they don't go back to an old nest, do they, Scott?
Well, I guess I'm not sure how they're actually getting in there. So
whatever
happens, whether you wait until winter or whether you knock them down with an insecticide now, figure out how they're coming and going.
They can get through a pretty small
nest,
hole,
and then make sure you've sealed that up so you don't have a repeat of the problem in the future.
Yep, there you go. Thank you for calling. John in Mount Horeb, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi. I have a question about dozens and dozens of divots that suddenly appeared in my yard overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we are surrounded by grassland. We never see squirrels in our yard. There are ground squirrels everywhere. And this is the first time in 10 years it's happened. We walk out there, and they're about the size of a golf ball, just like a little clump of sod thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't consider it a problem, but I'm wondering what sort of critter are we looking for?
And it appears to be happening overnight.
Yeah, the first time, and haven't seen it since.
Over the last, if you've been driving around a bit, over the last 2 or 3 weeks, the numbers of roadkill skunks has skyrocketed. There are skunks all over the place. And they've become very active, and they're notorious for digging grubs and other such things out of lawns. And you will not see them during the day. The little divots or bits of sod they're digging up or rolling up or whatever occurs at night. So given the environment you're describing, lack of squirrels, and I'm pretty sure that's skunk activity overnight. And
so I might want to not take stuff out to the compost pile at night, huh?
keep your eyes open if you do, but skunks are reasonably docile animals.
Yeah.
They're not that big a problem. I mean, it's just that the reputation they have because of the spraying, but I wouldn't be overly worried about it. There's probably not a whole lot you can do at this point, and eventually it's going to get cold, and that behavior will end, and the skunks will disappear. And depending on soil moisture and whatnot, you may not see them again for another 10 years. So stay out of their way, and I don't think you have a whole lot to worry about.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jennifer in Sparta, hello to you.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment. When we would used to go visit my father, there were squirrels in his next-door neighbor lot, and they were black and white. They were spotted like a Holstein cow would be. Where did those come from?
That's a good question. Although gray squirrels come in a variety of color phases, like we're talking about, albinistic white ones, melanistic black ones, Lady Isabella golden ones, and gray ones. And in northern Wisconsin, you see sort of intergrades that are rusty brown or dark with a lighter tail or what have you. To be honest, I've never seen what would be described as a piebald one, although that piebaldness is another genetic condition.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only explanation I can give you, but that's one color phase of gray squirrels I've never seen before.
It was for a couple years, and this was probably 10, 15 years ago when my father lived in this area, there was like about five of them. And, you know, the first time I saw it, it was a big squirrel. And then, like, the next year, there's a couple little squirrels running around that look like cows.
Well, certainly interesting to see, and probably, a variation that popped up there and then fizzled out. And it's not a very common one relative to some of the others.
No, it's definitely not. Thank you very much for calling. Well, speaking of piebald, Jim Packard joins us. He's got a little white and gray and black in his hair right now. And
thank you, Larry.
That's harsh.
Appreciate the compliment there. I was just going to say, though, we did have a phone call from a guy, Winchester, up near the UP, and he had an albino red squirrel that he wanted to talk, let you know that he'd seen.
So they're out there, and I know we have lots of listeners out there, too, and as a regular listener to this program, you know you're always going to hear something worthwhile. Today we're asking you to put a value on this program. Your contribution, vital to WPR, big part of what keeps us going. I hope you'll support this program and everything else you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio. Make a gift in any amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Jim, we're making a little progress.
We are making progress, Larry. We started the program with a goal of 70 calls. 20 people have responded so far, and that's an excellent showing. That means we've got 50 to go in the next hour in order to keep us on track by supporting the programs that you count on. So thanks if you've already given, and if not, give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. For that pledge of $60 or more, you can get the booklet Birding in the Badger State and Beyond, How to Get Started, and Bird Feeding, Tips for Beginners and Veterans. These two booklets will give you lots of information to get started with birding, tips on equipment, photography, bird seed websites, guides, squirrel issues, habitats, and more for your pledge of $60. It's important you decide the amount of your pledge, but when you decide $60 is the right amount for you, ask for the two booklets. One of the authors is sitting to my right. That's Scott Craven, who's involved in both of those, so you know that there's some authority behind this, and you can get yours. Now, here's something you don't want to miss. Today only, everybody who pledges at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 will be entered into a drawing to win an iPad. You could be the lucky winner of this computer. You don't have to pledge to participate. You would send us a postcard with your name, address, and phone number to iPad Drawing, Wisconsin Public Radio, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. The postcard has to be received by October 18th to be entered in the drawing.
But they're really very, very cool. We have an iPad at home. I really, frankly, my 7-year-old loves it. My wife loves it, and so do I. So they're really a wonderful piece of machinery, I guess. That's a wonderful computer, I guess, is what we should say. And so that's an opinion. We usually don't give our opinions on the air, but when we talk about Wisconsin Public Radio, we like to make an exception. We're not afraid to say we think WPR is a unique radio service, a service well worth your support. I hope you'll take a moment right now to voice your opinion by making a pledge of support at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Larry, we know there are many reasons why Wisconsin Public Radio listeners become Wisconsin Public Radio contributors. One of the main reasons is they want to make a difference. Giving to Wisconsin Public Radio is one way to make a difference and help your local community. So your new membership today not only pays for the programs you listen to, it gives other people in the neighborhood a chance to discover WPR. So make the difference. Give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
As Jim was saying earlier, we have 20 people have contributed already, 50 more to go to reach our goal. Give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. $60 or more, we'll send you a copy of the Birding in the Badger State and Beyond and Bird Feeding Tips for Beginners and Veterans. Lots of great information in those four-color publications. Yours for $60 or more. But I'll tell you what, whatever the amount, it doesn't have to be. It could be less than 60. It could be more. Please call in now at 888-202-2552. Make your pledge or go online. Better yet, WPR.org, WPR.org. And tell you what, let's take some more calls. Scott Craven, UW Extension Wildlife Ecologist, our guest. And for that number, call us at 1-800-642-1234. Let's go to Josh in Oxford next. Hi, Josh. Thank you for calling.
Hi, fellas. I'm just going to keep with the tangent squirrel theme.
Okay.
I didn't know if you guys or any of the listeners had heard of Olney, Illinois, the small town down in southern Illinois.
Olney, Illinois, yep.
Yep, famous for albinos.
That's right. They're the white squirrels on their side of their cop cars. That's they're, for a while they claimed to be the home of the white squirrel. I don't know if that's still true or not. But
yep, that little town was, and that's been a long time. That town was featured in Hartley Jackson's book, The Mammals of Wisconsin, which was published way back in 1959, when he cited Olney as you say, as kind of the home of white squirrels. So
that's very cool.
Thanks for bringing that up.
And where's Olney located?
Somewhere in Illinois. I think it's central part of the state, but
it's down in southern Illinois, Richland County, I think, about an hour from Effingham, if you know where that's at.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, there you go. Thanks, Josh. Appreciate the comment. All right. We'll take some more calls at 1-800-642-1234. Scott, I want to bring up bats because mm-hmm. we have some bat issues.
So there are some big issues. You know, bats are, of course, often we talk about them in the context of, well, they're in someone's attic and they don't want them there. But it's really a conservation issue that's at the forefront right now. And at a DNR, or Natural Resources Board meeting a few weeks ago, there was a proposal made that four cave bats that spend most of their time in caves, the little brown bat, the big brown bat, the long-eared bat, and the pipistrelle, were going to be proposed for threatened status. primarily because of the threat posed to them by the white nose syndrome disease, which there's considerable fear and anxiety that that may get to Wisconsin as soon as this winter. And part of the proposal was also to declare this the fungus that's behind the white nose syndrome, to have that listed as a prohibited invasive species, which may mean they can slow its spread down a little bit. But in any event, these are important proposals for bat conservation, and look for hearings around the state this month to voice your opinion. But hopefully the necessary protection and legislation will be put into effect, and hopefully we can stall off the appearance of white nose syndrome for as long as we possibly can.
As long as we can. Peg in Oshkosh, we turn to you now. Hi, Peg.
Hi, how is everybody?
Just great. Thank you for calling.
I have a problem, a big buzzing problem. We have hornets underneath the door sill of our front door, and we're not sure whether they're between the inside wall and the outside wall, or whether they have gone underneath into, you know, those poured concrete steps that they put in front of houses.
Yeah.
I think there's a little bit of a hollow back there. We've shot them with two cans of hornet killer at two different nights, and all they do is get madder.
You're not getting the right spot.
We're treading repeatedly here on Phil's territory in the insect world, but I'd be tempted to find another type of hornet spray. At least the stuff that I've been using just knocks them down, wham. I mean, they're down and immobile almost on contact, and by giving them a good shot of that, I would think you'd slow them down considerably. And in the meantime, if you can at least slow them down enough to close the access or the cavity they're using, between that and the onset of cold weather, I mean, that should be the end of them.
Okay. That was my next question. Do they chew through wood if they get really mad at you? Make another hole?
If you covered them, if you filled the hole in while they were still inside, that would not be a good thing to do.
All right, well, we would do that.
Well, you want to be careful that they're, if you seal their access outside or under the door, that their path of least resistance is to actually get inside. That would be bad.
That would be bad.
But if you're sure they're behind, say, the foundation of the house and a set of concrete steps that were added so that they're not connected to the foundation, there shouldn't be access to the house. And if that's the case, you know, sealing the opening quickly with something like that expanding foam insulation that would quickly fill the cavity and trap them, I would think you'd have the upper hand on them. But just be darn sure they can't get in the house.
Yeah.
And go from there.
Make very sure of that. Thank you for calling, Peg. Dave in Blanchardville. On to you now. Hi, Dave.
Yeah. Well, hi. Good morning.
Morning.
I have a problem with moles. We have a lawn right next to some prairie land, and so maybe the moles start in the prairie, and they're invading a relatively small area of our lawn lately, about an area about 50 by 100 feet, and they're tunneling every place, and the little volcanoes, you know, they're probably a dozen such little volcanoes, you know, eruptions of the dirt with all the trails. And I've not been able to have much effect on them. I've scattered this Mole Max material around on the grass, and I've tried the trap, but I never seem to get the trap into the trail that they're using. So I wonder what you can suggest.
Well, Dave, I feel your pain. my wife and I live in a house that's embedded in the middle of 10 acres of prairie grass, and our lawn has been, and trails through the prairie have been viciously assaulted by moles this year, in part because we've just had a ton of precipitation. So the soil has remained soft, worms have remained near the surface, and the moles have been very active. The bottom line for me right now is usually by this time of year, it's cooled off enough that the moles start going deep. They stay active all winter, but they stay below the frost line. So eventually they're going to go down, and you won't know they're there. There's nothing you can do about them anyway, and that should happen very soon. The bottom line is, before you spend a lot of money on an application of Mole Med or one of the other spray repellents, or spend a lot of time out there trapping, I've just taken the tack that I'm raking out the mounds and flattening down the tunnels, and I'm going to grin and bear it here with the last few lawn mowings until they're gone for the season. And if the precipitation regime is different next summer, you may have no trouble at all with them.
I see.
So I'm tempted to tell you to just, you know, grit your teeth and bear it until they're down for the year.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if you want to try something that callers were telling us they were having a great success with and a lot of fun back in midsummer, the trapping technique that people were calling in about was to excavate a little bit of the tunnel where they've pushed things up, excavate the tunnel maybe a foot long, clean it out, and place a rat trap, you know, a plain old snap-type rat trap baited with bacon.
Bacon grease.
Next to the tunnel, and then cover the whole thing with a big wash tub or box or whatever so that it's dark. And the folks were calling saying that that was a whole lot easier than some of the harpoon-type traps and things that people were afraid of, and that they were catching moles hand over fist. So if you want to have some something to pass your time with, give that a try. But frankly, it's the end of the mole damage season. I'd be tempted to let it go.
But the rat trap goes beside the trail, then, you're saying?
Yes, not on the trail.
Right, so that the mole's coming along, it's still dark, but all of a sudden...
They smell the bacon.
The tunnel just opened up. They're not herbivores. They're not interested in plant material, so the bacon apparently is very attractive, and whack, that's it.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And on to Greg and... Yeah, we've caused the demise of many moles, I think, here in Wisconsin with that trick.
Apparently. They're extremely annoying if you're trying to take care of your turf management, and it's not easy to deal with.
Scott Craven, UW Extension Wildlife Ecologist, our guest here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Scott Craven, our guest today, UW Extension Wildlife Ecologist. Scott, you know, last program, I believe we had some comments about badgers and whether or not you see badgers. And I know the DNR magazine has got a nice story on badgers.
Yes, the most recent Natural Resources magazine has a nice article entitled Digging Up Dirt About Badgers, and it talks about genetic research and other projects going on around the state to shed some light on how many badgers we really have and where are they and how they their day-to-day life, basically. So there's an opportunity here for the folks who, and I think some folks sent you pictures that you put up on your your Facebook page or whatever. But in any event, if you're seeing badgers, and it doesn't have to be a live badger out scurrying around, just knowing where a badger burrow is or even seeing a road-killed badger on the side of the road, the folks involved in the research are very interested in those encounters. And you can report those encounters, again, either a live badger, just a burrow, or a dead one, either by calling 414-229-4245.
Wait a minute, 414?
414-229-4245. Or, and it might be even easier to remember, just email badger@uwm.edu. So it's just badger@uwm.edu. And they're going to ask for your name, contact information, what you actually observed, and a very good description of specifically where it is, because they may very well come out, send the research assistant out, especially if it's a burrow, and put a hair catcher in the burrow to collect a genetic sample and take some other measurements and so forth. So it's a real opportunity for people to contribute to the database involved in these badger research projects. And along those lines, if you're so inclined to become a bit of a citizen scientist and report all this good stuff, it's a very helpful thing to do. And the DNR also has a new black bear and bobcat reporting site. So you can access this through the DNR website and report your observations of bobcats and bears. And additionally, there's a new online deer hunter survey, Deer Hunter Wildlife Survey, that went online just a couple of weeks ago. And I think stays on through the fall, or it may be actually permanent. But this is an opportunity to report deer and other wildlife observations, the bear and bobcat site, the badger research. It's just all sorts of things you can do, which will help the folks in charge of managing these species.
And, Scott, if you'll give me all that information at the end of the show, I'll put it up on my Facebook page. And so people can go to the Facebook page and find the information. If you haven't joined the Facebook page, it's – The Larry Mueller Show. Just The Larry Mueller Show. Go to that Facebook page, and we'll try and get that up. I don't know if I'll get it up today yet or not. By tomorrow morning, I'll put it up. We'll get it up.
And I'll give it to you by the end of the program.
All right, great. Well, let's take some more calls, and we have Greg in Stevens Point up next. Hi, Greg.
Hi. Basically, the question I have is it deals with squirrels. As far as gray squirrels and fox squirrels, do they interbreed as far as create hybrids, or is that something that's unheard of?
Well, excuse me. They're two different species. I mean, they look very similar, and I think some people, when they see a fox squirrel, think with that kind of rusty edges around the belly and tail and feet that they're seeing some variation of a gray squirrel like we've been talking about. But fox squirrels are a little bigger, a little slightly different habitat requirements and distribution, and a completely different species. So that's not something where they would interbreed with each other.
All right. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. And Annalisa in Wautoma, hello to you. Thank you for calling.
Hello, this is me about mices and mice.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, my accent, you know, whatever. You might have to listen really good. Anyway, we are here 40 years, and this is the first year that some mices or mice came into the, must have been up the wall and went into the, what do you call that, in between?
Inside the wall of your house?
Yeah, inside the wall and in the ceiling.
And in the ceiling, okay.
What can we do about that?
Okay.
Well, the appearance of mice, particularly white-footed or deer mice, into homes, in the homes, garages, sheds, outbuildings in the fall is a very common occurrence.
Very common.
Very common at my house, and that usually stimulates. In fact, I have a big bag of mouse traps in the garage, and I'm under considerable pressure to start running a trap line. But, well, there are a few options. First and foremost, it is, although it sounds conceptually easy to say, well, you know, just plug up all the holes and cracks and crevices that they might give them access to the house, that is virtually impossible. The sill plate of a house and spaces under garage doors and things like that are just too vulnerable. It doesn't require much of a hole to let these little guys in. But there's a very fairly narrow window in the fall when they come in. So if you can set some mouse traps strategically around such places, like the corners of garage doors or other places where you've seen them before, you can usually intercept most of them and catch them in the traps before they can establish themselves in the house. If they've already defeated that and they're in running around, then you have to start placing your traps or these sticky glue boards or whatever you choose to use in areas where they're going to try and find food. And that could be kitchen and cabinets or drawers or under the sink, behind the refrigerator, a whole host of places. But if you put traps out, take a piece of paper and carefully make notes to yourself that, yes, I put out 9 traps and here's where they are, with little X's on a diagram of the kitchen or the house. Otherwise, you tend to forget these traps and they're either going to frighten you sometime when one goes off, or you're going to catch a dead mouse and forget about it and it's going to be an odor problem. So that's just a little tip to help you out. Trapping will work, and if you want to get place packs of rodenticides and put those around, that may help as well. If they're in the wall voids and you can't get at them, you've got to hope that they start coming out for food where you can actually trap or use baits to remove them.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jim Packer joining me again. And we have an email from Christine in McFarland who says, I do appreciate guests like Scott Craven and want to make a contribution. Scott was helpful to the community of McFarland when we were establishing a dog park. He was able to answer questions on environmental impact of the park that people were concerned with. So just one of the many people who have contributed during this hour. I hope you'll join us as well. Our goal is to keep bringing you discussions with folks just like Scott Craven. We do that in large part with listener contributions. Your gift, any amount now, makes a big difference as we raise the money we need to make these discussions possible. So give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Jim, how are we doing?
Well, we've got a number of pledges in so far in the hour. We started with a goal of 70, and 38 people have responded. So we're looking for 32 more calls in the next 40 minutes to make our goal for the program and to keep us on track. And I also found somebody who had gone online to make their pledge and said, I've been listening to Wisconsin Public Radio since School of the Air. I still have some of my songbooks. My classmates and I had to take turns being the antenna for our old tube radio in the one room classroom at the time. We would stand next to the radio with one hand on the box and the other in the air so we could get better reception. Good times then.
Oh, good times.
And good times now, especially if you make your pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Got an exciting offer today only. Pledge any amount. You'll be entered into a drawing for an iPad, the latest craze in wireless computers, an ultra-thin design, large, high-resolution LED backlight display, a touchscreen, and you can get that when you pledge at any amount today, today only, at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You might wonder what your pledge pays for. Well, we have toll-free numbers. You can listen to, so you can call in your questions. And we rely on newspapers. We rely on magazine subscriptions. We have the internet services so that we can research the topics of the day. And all these things, and a lot more, to be perfectly honest, have costs associated with them, as you well know. Your pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 helps to pay for them. And with a $60 contribution or more, we'll send you a copy of two publications, one titled Birding in the Badger State and Beyond and Bird Feeding, Tips for Beginners and Veterans.
And we ought to thank David Drake for his hard work in putting these two together, part of a four-part series about birding that is available through the UW Learning Store, UW Extension Learning Store. And you can get two of them right now by making your pledge of $60 or more. All it takes is a gift of a dollar, two a week, and a few minutes of your time. That'll add up to about $50 or $100 for the year, and all year long, you'll benefit from this program and all of the other WPR programs that you listen to. So make your contribution right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, and give as generously as you can.
And here's something from one of our contributors.
I love to listen to both the classical music and the Ideas Network stations because, well, it seems to me they're the only ones that are worthwhile to listen to. The Ideas Network gives opposing political views and allows us, the general public, to express our views about current issues. It's important for me to be able to come to my own conclusions about issues, and this is one way that I can do that.
And it's one way that you can do that as well. Listener support, such a big part of our programs. Make your donation in support of programs you count on, programs like this one. Scott's certainly one of our most popular guests that we have here on the Ideas Network. I hope you'll put a vote in for Scott and for WPR by going to WPR.org or calling 888-202-2552.
Larry, we're looking for 31 more calls in the next 35 minutes to make our goal of 70 calls for the program. And thanks if you've already given. And if not, help us stay on track by making your contribution right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. For the pledge of $60 or more, you'll get Birding in the Badger State and Beyond, How to Get Started, and Bird Feeding, Tips for Beginners and Veterans. The booklet's giving you lots of information to get started with birding, tips and equipment, photography, bird seed, websites, so much more. For a pledge of $60, you decide the amount of your pledge. And when you do pledge, you'll be entered into a drawing to win an iPad. You don't have to pledge to participate. We'd like to emphasize that. You'd send a postcard with your name, address, and phone number to iPad Drawing, WPR, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. And it's got to be received by the 18th of the month.
Wisconsin Public Radio keeps you informed and entertained every day. Lots of programs. Of course, we're a little partial to this program, but I also love hearing Kathleen Don. We've got Chapter a Day, Talk of the Nation, What Do You Know, Says You, Old Time Radio Drama, and the many others you've come to rely on. I think we give you a window on the world like no other. So I hope you'll support this exciting mix of programs that you enjoy on this station with your contribution at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552.
You might consider sharing your appreciation of the lifelong learning that you get from WPR by making a gift of $1,000. Your gift of $1,000, about $83 a month, will help WPR become available to everyone. And of course, any amount is welcome. Right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And Larry, we're down to 29 calls to go.
29. All right. Well, I tell you what. Programs like this one, we talk a lot about the outdoors, the environment. We talk on this program about finances, popular culture. We have many authors, including a lot of Wisconsin authors. Valuable service, a service worth supporting. Your contribution of $50 or $100 or whatever amount you choose makes these programs possible. So if you haven't pledged yet, please do it now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You know, you've got a habit of listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. Now make it a habit of donating. Pledge your support. Renew the support each year. A good habit and a habit you can be proud of. So get it started today with your pledge of any amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And, of course, at the $60 level, you get the two booklets, Birding in the Badger State and Beyond, How to Get Started, and Bird Feeding, Tips for Beginners and Veterans.
Thanks to those of you who renew by mail or make ongoing monthly transfers from your bank account. Listeners who renew and the monthly sustainers are really our backbone here at WPR. If that's you, thank you very much. If you haven't given yet, join the wonderful WPR members who have donated. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Do it right now. We'll be back with Scott right after a look at the news. Scott Craven, UW Extension wildlife ecologist, our guest today, talking wildlife. And I want to go to Dave in Rockbridge, who's been waiting quite a while. Dave, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Hi. Hi, Larry. Hi, Scott.
Hello.
Scott, just a couple comments. I, like you, had assumed these divots in my lawn here were made by skunks. Mm-hmm. Then I started to observe our friends, the sandhill cranes, who come every day to our yard, and they are the ones that are making the holes in the lawn. And they're apparently after grubs, that's what my assumption is, and they make these holes, these divots, just like you did with the golf club. But, yeah, they come and visit us every day and yell at us, and we enjoy their visits, but they've really been after my lawn this year.
Well, Dave, there are actually a couple of things that will make the divots, raccoons and squirrels during the day and cranes during the day and other things. But it seemed like with the previous caller identifying it as an overnight thing that skunks were the best bet. But if for any of these mysteries, I mean, something we've pointed out for a number of past programs, if people are really baffled by something that's going on, especially at night, then borrow a trail camera, one of these remotely triggered cameras that lots of people have now, and set the thing up, and you're going to get pictures of the culprit, whatever it is, and solve the mystery. So thanks. The cranes, so you must be near a wetland or something, or a field they're working in? Or
yes, well, they actually are in the fields around our place, and we have grass in our yard. We're in a rural area. And they come over to the grass, I think, because of access. It must be to these grubs that they are digging up or something.
Hmm.
So, but I've watched them now for weeks and weeks, and they come daily, and they dig these holes in the grass. So just one other comment for you, Scott. Mm-hmm. I believe, and you can double-check on this, that albinos are only protected outside of the CWD areas. That in the CWD areas, it is legal, not maybe the best thing to do, but to harvest albino deers.
No, I think you're right with that. And actually, the hotbed of all the reports of albino deer that I think we've had over the years, or the books that Jeff Richter has done up in Boulder Junction on ghosts of the forest and all, the northern part of the state seems to be the hotbed for this. So if one does occur in the CWD zone, it's a little more uncommon, but it's still a deer, and it's still subject to the disease and so forth, so not protecting them there makes some sense.
Yep. There you go. Thank you very much, Dave, for calling. Appreciate your comments. And I want to go back to an earlier comment. Scott, you talked about foaming in on a cement sidewalk, and you were talking about insects here.
Yeah, I wasn't talking about foam either, per se. The issue here is there was presumably a space between a foundation and a step that you could fill it with anything, but one of the most user-friendly tools for filling a void for any reason, for insulation or for keeping out mice or whatever, is a can of this spray polystyrene insulation,
right,
which comes out of the can as a wet foam but quickly dries and expands many times over to fill whatever hole or crack you're interested in. So within a few moments, it's hard, and you can actually cut off the surplus or sand it or clean it or paint it or whatever. But it's not a foam that would contaminate the environment or coat animals or cause any problem like that. So if there was any confusion, there you go.
Andrew in Lake Mills, your turn. Hi, Andrew.
Hi. I got a question about a skunk. Are they kind of territorial, or I've been seeing the skunk out by my cars lately in the driveway.
Okay.
Well, as we mentioned in the context of the divots in the lawn, skunks have been very active the past few weeks, and lots of them have been turning up dead on the road, and you don't even have to see them to know that. So they're out and about. It doesn't surprise me that you're seeing one out and about, and you may very well see a number of them in an area where there's a good food supply, but they're not a particularly social animal, so if you have one that you're trying to get rid of and do so, it may be a while before another one moves in, but that's not necessarily a guarantee.
No, not necessarily. Thank you for calling, Andrew. John in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, sure. I had a question for you about wasps.
Okay.
Over the last couple months while out hiking at some state parks in the state here, I've noted on south and west-facing cliff faces of both limestone and sandstone, some large aggregations of what appear to be wasps, and they're fairly docile. I was curious if you've noticed this or if you have any explanations.
I have no explanation whatsoever, John. I'm sorry, but this is a question. We've been dancing around Phil Pelletieri's territory with some of the problems for the last hour or so, but in this case, either to identify the species or their appearance on those very specific habitat types, that's a question that should either hold until Phil Pelletieri's on the program or direct it to him via email or a phone call to campus.
Yeah, the Insect Diagnostic Laboratory at UW-Madison, you could direct a message there, John, and probably get an answer pretty quickly. Thanks for calling. Tim in Arpin, hello.
We've been getting coyotes uncomfortably close to our house. Seems about 3 o'clock in the morning, I mean, in different packs. One pack is about maybe a half mile to a mile away, and there's one pack that's about 100 yards from our house. We have dogs and horses. But the real question I had, where there's coyotes, will wolves also live in that same area? Because we have had wolves, too.
Generally speaking, the various members of the dog family don't play well together. And in terms of increasing size, coyotes will displace fox, and wolves will aggressively kill or displace coyotes. So having the coyotes around is probably of less concern in terms of the safety of dogs or livestock, and therefore isn't necessarily a bad thing. We have a pack that, in fact, I think it was just a couple nights ago that as we were going to bed, my wife said, "Holy cow, listen to the coyotes." And they were yipping and yapping and apparently passing through the back couple of acres behind the house. But I also have dogs, and I guess this coyotes are a fact of life in Wisconsin. They're quite abundant. They're quite widespread, and I think unless they're causing some specific problem, I wouldn't get too agitated about it. And as long as they're around, it's probably a good indication that the wolves aren't.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Roger in Reedsburg, hello to you.
Hi. I was calling to report a spotting of a white squirrel in the Lake Delton area over by the Springbrook Golf Course.
Okay.
I actually spotted it as I was driving down the road.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and the other thing I was calling about was a badger sighting.
Okay.
It was between the Highland and Cobb area on Highway 80,
mm-hmm.
Which really surprised me because I drive truck, and it was in the middle of the day that he was coming out of a cornfield to try and cross the road.
Hmm.
That is very unusual.
Well, if you have a, you know, a pretty specific location where you could pin that down, the either the the email address or the phone number that we gave earlier, I'm sure those folks would like to have that added to their Badger observation database. So.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thanks for calling.
And that was Badger@UWM.edu.
Yep.
Badger@UWM.edu. Gary in Shell Lake, it's your turn. Hi, Gary.
Hi. You had a lady that called in with a bee problem in her steps.
Yep.
And we had a bee problem in our siding one time, and we couldn't get spray into them and stuff, and we ended up tying a hose to a shop vac to the hole. And every time they came out of the hole, they ended up in the shop vac. And then we just sprayed a little bug killer into the shop vac, and that was the end of them. But we had to do it, like, twice because it seemed like some more must have hatched out or something.
Oh.
Sounds like a good plan.
All right. Sounds like a good plan. Thanks a lot for calling, Gary. Appreciate it. Scott, you mentioned at the start of the program that you were at a conference, the Wildlife Society National Conference.
Yes.
Anything interesting happened there?
Oh, lots of interesting stuff. Anytime you put 1,400 or 1,500 wildlife professionals in the same place, there are bound to be some things happening. There were numerous papers presented, workshops, symposia, and that kind of thing. But as I thought back on what was discussed by the attendees or presented, some of the hot topics that I think people might be interested in, there was lots of discussion. There's tremendous concern over the climate change issue. And
yeah.
Lots of groups within the wildlife profession and virtually all of the environmental concerns working on and trying to figure out how to adapt to climate change. There was a great deal of discussion about human-wildlife interactions of all kinds. Airport safety, deer vehicle collisions, even some renewed interest in feral cats. So I'm glad we're leaving this till the tail end of the program because I don't want to kick that can again right now. But there was considerable discussion about that. There was a fascinating paper. I happened to be in a session on human interactions and the fellow who's in charge of the Northern Yellowstone Ecosystem Wolf Program.
Oh.
Idaho, Montana, Wyoming,
right.
And so forth gave a terrific paper on the wolf situation in that area. And, I mean, the room was packed. People were hanging from the ceiling fixtures to try and hear that talk. And it was a perfect parallel to what's going on in Wisconsin in terms of they're protected, they're not protected, they're protected, they're not protected, and all of the various problems that go along with that. But his conclusion was, hey, wolves are here to stay. We might as well get used to that, and it's going to be a matter of what size population they're managed at. So that was a big deal. And there was lots of sessions and symposia on this white nose syndrome and bat conservation issue in relation to white nose syndrome, wind power development, and other things. So it was a good meeting.
Good meeting. We got an email from Charles. He had a question about the color, reflected color in an animal's eyes, is it unique to each animal, that reflected color?
Well, it is to a degree. For example, as I sit out on the deck with my Q-beam trying to look around and see what you see, the most brilliant ones are possums, just a bright orange-red eye. And but you have to realize with 65 or 70 species of mammals in the state, there's only just so many colors to go around. So there is some overlap, but... I remember when we were pursuing brush-tailed possums in New Zealand 6 or 7 years ago, the guy said, okay, we're looking at eye shine here to decide what we're after. And he said, the only thing we have to be very careful, we don't do anything with our blue eyes. Those would be sheep. And the farmers in New Zealand would be very excited if anything happened to sheep. But any other eye color was of some concern for removal.
And there's a YouTube out there, if I'm not mistaken, from one of the grad students here going into bear dens. Have you seen that, Scott?
Yes, it's supposed to be very good.
I haven't seen it yet, but
yep.
I want to take a look at it. And Mike in Oshkosh, let's go to you. Hi, Mike. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I know you're ending here. Real quick, I saw a badger scurry into a den on a bike trail that I use a lot. I'm wondering, do they go back to the same den year after year, or is that just kind of an annual thing?
Well, they're kind of persnickety about suitable den sites. So if there's a particularly good cut bank or roadside or something like that, they'll use it year after year. But again, you seem to know specifically where that one is, so that would be another good den location to report to the research website or phone number.
Yeah, it's badger@uwm.edu, if you can get online, Mike.
Okay, I'll do that.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I always appreciate seeing Jim Packard come by, too. And he's with us once again to talk about the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive, trying to raise some money that we need to pay for the programs that keep you in the know and entertained. That's how we work here at WPR. The people who use it help to pay for it. I hope you'll go to WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552. Call right now. Let's ensure the future of the programs you count on. That's WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Jim, we've made real good progress.
Indeed we have. We started this program with a goal of 70 calls, and we have 66 of them in hand. That means we've only got four to go. I feel like I'm in the lion's den and that
or the bear's den
here. Give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Help pay for the programs that you depend on. And for your pledge of $60 or more, you can get two booklets, Birding in the Badger State and Beyond, How to Get Started, and Bird Feeding, Tips for Beginners and Veterans. Those booklets will give you lots of information to get started with birding, on tips on equipment, photography, bird seed, websites, guides, squirrel issues, habitats, and more. That's where the pledge is, $60. It's important for you to decide the amount of your pledge, and we also would say that we've got an exciting offer that if you pledge at any amount, WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, you'll be entered in the drawing for an iPad. And as Larry will testify, it's something worth having.
It's something worth having. You know, my seven-year-old uses it, and she's very adept with it. I'm even adept with it, and I wouldn't consider myself to be a very techie kind of a person. They're really a lot of fun to use. And so why not make a contribution right now? You've been enjoying the conversation with Scott Craven, our UW Extension wildlife ecologist, as we talked about all kinds of things. You never know what's going to happen. I mean, who would have thought we'd have got into albino squirrels, you know? But here we are. We spent a lot of time on squirrels today. And, you know, that's what kind of makes the program fun and interesting. Once in a while, we get off onto a topic that a lot of people are interested in. I hope you'll take a few minutes to make this hour and the many hours to come possible. Put a value on the programs you enjoy every day, then make your pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Larry, we've got 7 minutes left, and we need three calls to make our goal. Three calls is all we need. Giving couldn't be simpler. Is all we need is your name, contact information, the amount of your pledge, and how you'd like to pay for it. Use a credit card if you can't, because it saves you and WPR time and the price of a stamp. Or better yet, sign up for automatic sustaining donations from your bank account. Don't worry, we will not share your personal information with any other organization. Give now, WPR.com. Or at 888-202-2552.
And here's another comment from one of our listeners.
Well, I think it's an investment in your own brain. I mean, I'm a retired person now, and as you get older, you do realize you need to keep your brain flexible. And even when I was younger, it's good to keep your brain flexible. And investing in public radio, in Wisconsin public radio, really helps me to keep my brain up to date and gives me different ideas and different viewpoints. Wisconsin public radio is my source for a better life.
And, you know, it helps to keep my brain nimble as well. It's a lot of fun to do this program with a wide variety of guests we have. I always look forward to Scott's appearances, usually on the first Wednesday of the month when we talk about animals in the outdoors. I hope you'll put a vote in for this program. Pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Maybe your gift is $60 or $120 or $500. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount at WPR.org or at 888 888- 202-252-2552. Whatever you do, do it right now.
Larry, we've exceeded our goal. We're at 70 calls right now, and we've still got another 5 minutes to go. So it's like an overbid in television. We're so happy. And we've got 31 new members of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Excellent.
Of that 70. And that's great. They're so important to Wisconsin Public Radio. So thanks to all the first-time donors who have pledged so far this hour and during the drive. The more people who support WPR, the more stable our financial situation, and the better that we're able to withstand economic ups and downs. So if you've never given before, know that your new membership will help keep Wisconsin Public Radio the very same strong, reliable station that you depend on. You decide the amount, then give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
I know for a lot of people, the Ideas Network is your companion all day long. And whether you wake up with us or you ride to work or errands with us or cook dinner with us or listen at home or at work, you get interesting discussions whenever you want them. We're always here, and you make that all possible with your donation. Wisconsin Public Radio, and believe me, would not be what it is without your support. So please go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
Larry, we're looking for as many pledges as we can get in the next 5 minutes because we're now at 71. We're past our goal, and so a very successful day. Pledges like yours will keep us on track to support the programs you count on. So thanks if you've already given. If not, give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And, of course, we've got this exciting offer today, and it's today only. Pledge any amount, you'll be entered in a drawing for an iPad, the latest craze in wireless computers. You'll be entered in the drawing for an iPad when you pledge any amount today only. And, of course, you don't have to pledge to participate. You send a postcard with your name, address, and phone number to iPad Drawing, WPR 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706, and get it in by the 18th of October.
Sometimes you want to listen to WPR, but maybe you're not near a radio. And you know what? That's okay, because you can listen online from anywhere in the world. Just go to WPR.org and click on Our Live Streams. I think the furthest away I've had a call during a show was from Paris, France. Somebody was listening in Paris during one of our Garden Talk programs and called in. And I tell you what, if you're in Paris or if you're in Madison or if you're in Door County or if you're in Bayfield County, wherever you are, you can hear us. And your pledge will really help us support all of these services. Another thing you can do at WPR.org, you can make your donation right now. Do it now at WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552. Looking forward to hearing from you. If you can contribute $60 or more, we'll send you a copy of Birding in the Badger State and Beyond and a copy as well of Bird Feeding Tips for Beginners and Veterans. Scott's one of the authors of those two publications. Do it now. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
You know, when you pledge at WPR.org, you're adding your voice to the more than 45,000 members who support Wisconsin Public Radio, and your contribution of any amount will join other members' contributions to make up nearly 40% of our programming budget. And with your sustaining pledge, WPR will have a tree planted in the Shawamigan National Forest in Wisconsin. You can find out more about this thank you gift at our Plant a Tree Frequently Asked Questions page. That would be www.wpr.org/membership/plant-a-tree. And that's done as a sustaining member of Wisconsin Public Radio, WPR.org, or at 888-202-2552.
I hope we get some pictures of the planting of those jack pines. I need to find out. I've spent a lot of time in the Shawamigan Forest. I'm going to look those up.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to look those up, and hopefully we'll have some pictures for our Facebook page. Tell you what, if you haven't donated, we're getting near the end of the program. Now would be a great time to do it. Please pledge now. We got a few minutes to go before the end of the official end of our program. We're going to have to go away. But thanks to everybody who's participated. We could use your donation right now. So please make your pledge right now at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552. That's WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thanks to everyone who's contributed. Please contribute now if you haven't done so already. And thanks very much to Scott Craven.